Justice of the Court, my name is Elwood T. Evelyn, Jr. I represent Betty Bantam, who was injured in a fall on ice at the Howard High School in Wilmington, Delaware. She was in the process of attending a function sponsored and hosted by the Delaware African American Society to celebrate African American History Month and Dr. Martin Luther King. The day prior to this event, there had been a terrible snow and ice storm, much like we had yesterday, but in a much larger quantity. Nevertheless, it was decided that this event would go on. The Delaware African American Society had obtained use of Howard High School from the Newcastle County VOTAC School District. In order to do so, they had to fill out a form. That form specifically required, stated, must be accompanied by information regarding the insurance coverage that that organization using the facility had. And the form is very clear. You must have this insurance, and you must give us this information. As it turns out, those are the only rules.
But the form and the content of the form, is that addressed by statute?
It is, but not directly, Your Honor. In 14 Delaware Code Section 1056C, the legislature required that school boards establish some guidelines for the use of this facility, either by a nonprofit or by a for-profit third-party user. The subsection indicates that each school board shall adopt a set of rules and regulations governing the use of school property and school equipment within the respective district, subject to the provisions hereinafter set forth. In the Newcastle County VOTAC School District, after much discovery, what we established is these are the only rules and regulations that have actually been adopted by the school district. This form that you have to fill out that requires that you have insurance in order to use the facility. It's our argument that this statute must be read as a whole in order to activate the immunity that is set forth in subsection H. And the statute, in fact, in its preceding seven subsections, sets forth a fairly organized method by which a school district is supposed to look at these groups. They're supposed to look at the group itself, the content of its message.
They could adopt a form that did not require proof of insurance.
It certainly could have. There's no requirement in the statute that says that they have to adopt a form that sets forth specifically that there is insurance. They opted to do this in this case. I think, though, that if you look at the statute as a whole, it does imply that the school board is required to look at the fiscal responsibility of the corporation or nonprofit group using the facility. In subsection, I believe it's E, there is a requirement that it look carefully at the content of the group and how it operates. In fact, in this case, the Delaware African American Society had an ongoing relationship with the school, knew that basically it was an organization run by one individual, an individual who is well known in the community, but that they were basically a shoestring operation.
Now, did your client bring a lawsuit against the society?
We did. The society is impecunious.
I thought I read somewhere in the record the matter was settled, or was it simply dismissed?
It was settled for essentially stated consideration, I believe $100, which has not been paid. And essentially, we looked at the cost of going to trial versus what we were going to come out with.
So tell us the precise legal issue. When I read your briefs, it sounded like you were saying this was distinguishable from an action for failure to maintain. It was more a failure to warn. But your oral argument so far seems to be focusing on the fact that to the extent you didn't comply with your form, you violated the statute, and therefore, since you didn't comport with the statute, you don't get immunity under the statute. So help me sort out your legal argument.
Well, I believe, Justice Holland, there are two distinct issues. The first, which we raised, was the duty to warn, and that is separate from a duty to maintain.
So this is in the context property. Of this large snow and ice storm that you just described. You're saying that it was a failure to say, you know, you're going to an event in the middle of a large snow and ice storm.
Well, this was not, as it was in the Cash versus East Coast Construction case, a situation where the storm was ongoing. It had ended 24 hours previous.
But there was still snow and ice on the ground.
There was still snow and ice on the ground, which the school district would have a duty to remove. That's a separate duty to maintain. I don't have a problem with that. But it's aware that it has loaned out the school to a third-party group.
Well, my question is, there's snow and ice on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
You're saying somehow the school district should have given notice to people visiting the school for this event that there was snow and ice on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
How would they discharge that duty?
Simply by signs, warning signs. That would be simple enough.
Wasn't the snow and ice open and obvious?
No, it wasn't, Your Justice Ridgely. In this case, and this is kind of a side argument because in the motion for summary judgment, the question of contributory or comparative negligence was not raised. That would have been a factual issue. I believe Judge Abelman raised it as an aside in the decision of the case, but the case was decided on this issue. Her finding was the duty to warn and the duty to maintain are indistinguishable. And in fact, I think the Superior Court in the decision below stated that the duty to warn really doesn't exist as a separate tort.
Well, that's what I'm trying to sort out, because the school is permitting its facility to be used after hours.
Mm-hmm.
And admittedly, not removing the snow and ice, you concede as part of the duty to maintain. But you still want the school to put up a sign, mm-hmm. something to the effect, there's snow and ice, be careful, we didn't remove it. Or mm-hmm. why isn't the burden on the society holding the event to put up a sign that says, there's snow and ice, be careful?
I would argue that that duty is on both. Certainly the school district, it is the owner, and in fact, on the factual circumstances, in this case, the possessor of the property, because the custodians had to open the school, the custodians had to make the school available. So the school district was involved, frankly, in opening up this event to the public by turning the key.
Well, I think I understand this aspect of your argument. So you said that you had two arguments. Tell me the legal issue that's framed by the failure to make sure the society had insurance.
Yes. 14 Delaware Code Section 1056H sets up this immunity. It is the last provision in a statute that establishes the right of a school board to allow third-party groups in. The statute requires school boards to take a look at these groups that are going to use the facility, examine what they're going to use the facility for, make sure that it is a positive community use. The statute itself makes fairly clear that they don't want political parties.
No, I understand, but the question comes down to, let's suppose that there's a group that meets all of these criteria
mm-hmm.
and just has no money.
Right.
The logical extension of your argument seems to be that you can be the most worthwhile group in the world and comport with every single provision in the statute, but if you don't have some money or you don't have insurance, you don't get to meet. Is that your legal argument?
Yes, because I think it requires that these are groups that would act appropriately under circumstances. Whether you're AA or whether you're the Delaware African American Society, the school board is looking to, and I think the statute's overall tone, is that they must look at this to see that they're going to use the premises responsibly and take such action as to not give risk to the public, and if so, to be responsible for that risk. And that requires that the school board set some rules out.
I thought in response to Justice Ridgely's question, you indicated there was no requirement that you have insurance. This just happened to be on this particular school's form.
There's no requirement in the statute, but what the statute does provide is, the clear tone of the statute is that you must, it specifically says you must set rules for use of the building, and you must follow the rules. And the only rules that the Newcastle County Votech School District has set in this are those contained on the form. And the one rule of importance that's contained in the form is you must have liability insurance.
Well, given the fact that this statute, at least at the end, provides immunity from liability, wouldn't you expect that the General Assembly would have specifically said somewhere else in the statute that any group that's coming on the property has to have insurance in light of the fact that the school board is not going to be liable? But there's nothing that says that, is there?
No, and my position would be that you wouldn't have to say that.
Well, for example, it would not seem to me to be inappropriate for a particular school district as their rules and regulations to mm-hmm. simply say that the people have to clean up after themselves, they have to provide adequate security personnel, mm-hmm. and they can't have more than 500 people, mm-hmm. Or something along those lines as to the nature and extent of the use that's permissible without a single mention of anybody having liability insurance. Wouldn't that constitute sufficient rules and regulations?
But in this case, the legislature didn't do that.
No,
they did was set up a framework.
But what I'm saying is that it's just fortuitous that the rules in this particular school district said that the visiting association or group has to have proof of insurance, right? They could just as easily have rules that did not include that requirement, couldn't they?
They could have, although I think that it's clear that the legislature, by giving discretion to the school board in establishing rules, at the same time set forth a framework in the statute when read as a whole that requires the school board to carefully and judiciously decide what rules it's going to use and to follow those rules throughout.
I'd like to go back for a second to the duty to warn. As I understand the facts, when your client arrived, parking lot was lit up from street lights, and she could see that the lot was, quote, full of ice, unquote. Is that correct?
According to her deposition testimony, she was aware there was ice on the parking lot. And once again, that brings us back into the contributory negligence or negligence or comparative issue.
I want to focus on duty. So, hypothetically, municipalities will have a requirement that sidewalks must be cleared in front of people's residences. And if someone falls on the sidewalk, arguably there may be a cause of action. But is there a duty to warn, apart from the duty to clear the sidewalk that may be imposed by ordinance, is there a duty when it snows or there's ice out there for the owner to put a sign out for people walking down the sidewalk?
Yes. The standard common law tort duty to an invitee. This is not like the front of your house where you are protected by the premises guest statute, or as it is in Wilmington, where this court found the city statute unconstitutional in regard to the requirements for repair and maintenance of sidewalks, and that while there is a statute requiring that it be cleared, it is one that is not necessarily actionable on a civil level as regards other folks that are other than business invitees.
Now, the school district itself did not carry insurance?
School district itself does carry insurance.
It does carry insurance that would cover this?
Yes.
Has the issue of waiver of immunity been addressed?
No, it has not, because the statute does not refer to any exception when there is insurance, and I believe in past decisions this court has held where there's not a specific exception, as there is in the state immunity statute, the general immunity statute, that the provision of insurance does not necessarily release that immunity.
Okay. Do you want to save your remaining time?
Yes, I would, Your Honor. Thank you.
Good morning, Justices. My name is Steve Maluski, and I'm representing the appellee, Newcastle County Vocational Technical School District in this case. It's a pleasure to be here, and I appreciate the opportunity to be heard. I'm going to take the appellant's argument in two parts. One, first part being the allegation of failure to warn and failure to inspect that he's essentially saying is separate from a duty to maintain. The school district's position is this is a negligence case. If you look at this case, simply put, and as I don't think there's any dispute from the pleadings, Mr. Eveland and the appellant is arguing that the proximate cause of this lady's injuries was the fact that she slipped and fell on ice. Clearly the statute, 1056H, 14 Delcy, 56H, provides immunity to the school district for cases of negligence when they're permitting an outside entity, a non-public school entity, to have use of their school when it has to do with maintenance and construction. Clearly, Mr. Eveland and the appellant have no dispute with the fact that removal of sand or removal of snow and ice from a premises is part of maintenance. Now he's trying to, what they're trying to say, I think, is that a duty to warn and a duty to inspect is separate than maintenance. Now, our position is that a duty to inspect and a duty to warn is part of the duty aspect of negligence. And it's one of those elements from law school that you have to show under the theory of negligence. So I believe the court in the Sippel case that I cited to was trying to make that point and made that point rather clearly that a duty to warn is not an independent cause of action, but it's part of the duty section of negligence. So if you take this case and you look at it from the perspective of negligence and duty to warn and duty to inspect is part of negligence, then you already have the concession of maintenance that I think this case squarely fits under the statute. Now, going to the fact that the form requires these outside entities to provide proof of insurance. I think you got to go back to the underlying case. This case has to do with a lady, unfortunately, slipping and falling on ice. The proximate cause of her injuries have nothing to do with the fact that there was no insurance forms provided when this form was submitted to the school district. And Justice Holland, I think you hit on this point in your questioning of the appellant. The statute doesn't require the folks who lease the school, for lack of a better term, to provide insurance. This is part of the form, and quite honestly, I think the reason the school district has included this requirement or suggestion on the form to provide additional insurance is to provide an extra layer of coverage in the event a situation arises when these third-party entities use the school
Let me stop you for a moment. First of all, you talk about how the form, the regulation or rule requiring proof of insurance is designed to give an extra layer of coverage. If there's no first layer of coverage because the school district is immune, I don't know how you would call this an extra layer of coverage, right?
Well, that's a good point, but I'll admit that this statute, unlike the statute that was cited in the briefs in North Carolina, which is clearly more broad than the statute in Delaware, I think there probably are times where the school district would not be immune under this statute if the injury had nothing to do with maintenance and construction of the school. For example, a fight breaks out that has to between people who are at the event and somebody from the school district, or something else happens that's not covered by the statute. So
in that respect, maybe this could be considered an extra layer of insurance. But my concern is this. If you've got a statute that grants immunity, and in response to that statute or pursuant to that statute, the school district says, okay, here are our rules. Any entity that comes on, in addition to meeting other basic requirements of what they're doing, has to have proof of insurance. Why shouldn't the failure to abide by their own rules constitute a waiver of the statute? And what I'm getting at is that if, on the one hand, the school district recognizes the importance of having insurance coverage for potential injuries, and then on the other hand can't be bothered to make sure that people there are providing insurance, shouldn't the school district then be unable to rely on the statute, be estopped from using the statute as a way of avoiding liability?
Yeah, I understand your question. I think the answer is no. I think the reason is the reason for them having this particular bit of information on this form, the requirement of liability coverage, is just as I suggested earlier, that in the event something is not covered under the statute, there's protection. The school district can't guarantee
protection for who? The injured person or the school district?
For both. I think if something were to happen at the school during one of these events that was not covered under the statute, that had nothing to do with maintenance and construction of the school, then there is this additional coverage to protect the injured person and to protect the school district. Because if you look at the form, there's also a hold harmless agreement in the form that comes between the school district and the entity that's using the school.
But you indicate that this additional insurance serves a purpose when an injury occurs that is not in any way related to maintenance so forth.
Right.
Why isn't that additional coverage also being required to provide for the situation where there's no coverage from the school district because the school district is immune?
Well, I think it's just the decision that the school district made. I think this is a form that they want these entities to fill out.
No, wait a second. Okay. I don't think you're getting the gist of my question. I'm trying to determine what the purpose is for having that requirement, okay?
Okay.
And you're saying that the purpose is to provide additional coverage in a case where the school district is not immune.
Okay.
Okay? And I'm asking, isn't the purpose also to provide the sole coverage when the school district is immune?
Sure, I would think so, but I, okay. but I don't think that the fact that somebody doesn't have insurance, like in this case, when the African American Society didn't have insurance, it doesn't prevent an injured party from attempting to recoup their damages from that entity.
But the point of insurance is to provide a source of funds for someone who's injured when the insured party can't do that.
Sure.
And the school district thought it was important enough to have a rule that said nobody comes on our property without proof of insurance.
Sure.
And then the school district doesn't bother to abide by its own rule. And you seem to be arguing, well, that doesn't matter because the statute grants the school district immunity and the statute doesn't require them to have this provision. But what I'm trying to get at is that having decided that this type of protection is to be required of anyone who comes on the premises, doesn't the school district, in failing to live up to its own requirement, thereby waive any argument that it is immune under the statute?
I don't think that it waives argument that it's immune under the statute.
But I know you don't think that, but I'm trying to ask you what the basis is for that.
Well, I mean, the basis is that the school district is required to accept applications from all entities. There's nothing in the statute or nothing that the school district can do if an entity comes into the school district with a form that says, look, we would like to use your school, and we don't have insurance. A school district can't tell them no.
Oh, really?
I think under the statute, I think they would have a problem.
But I thought the statute says that you're allowed to have rules and regulations.
You're allowed to have rules. I'm sorry, I apologize. I see what you're saying. But I think the confusion is that the form that is supposed to be filled out is, simply put, supposed to provide an additional area of coverage for the school district and for the injured party. And I understand what you're saying. This is a rule that they have for these outside entities to use their school. But I don't think it was intended to be a requirement for all entities to use the school.
Is there something in that regulation that says it doesn't apply to everybody?
There's nothing in the form that says it doesn't apply to everybody. No, Your Honor.
So you're just surmising that?
That's been my experience with these forms and my experience with this statute. To answer your question honestly, I just don't think that the situation would be that they would waive immunity just because the outside entity does not provide a copy of their liability insurance policy. And I think if you go back to the original point, that the fact that even if you decide that this was negligent and the school district was negligent in not following through with their policies and procedures, I think it goes back to the original point that wasn't the proximate cause of her injuries.
I'm not talking about proximate cause. I'm talking about waiver.
Well, I don't see that they waive their right, Your Honor, by failing to allow these entities to use their school without providing the proof of insurance. And again, going back to the case law that we have in terms of duty to warn and duty to inspect, I think that clearly that's part of your duty obligation under the prongs of negligence. And the area in question with respect to the failure to fill out the forms, it's simply our position that, yes, although the form does require entities to provide the proof of insurance, the statute doesn't require it. I think at the end of the day, if the school district didn't allow people to or parties to or groups to use their school, and they didn't have the opportunity to have insurance, then they could have potential other problems.
Well, Mr. Evelyn said there was discovery in this case. Do we know whether the school simply never asked for it, or the school made a conscious decision in this case to say, all right, we understand single event insurance is expensive, and we're not going to require that?
Honestly, Justice Holland, I believe the testimony from the school district individual was that they didn't ask for it because they knew the gentleman. The gentleman who runs the African American Assembly, who put on this event, actually has a wing in Howard High School where this incident took place, and he's there all the time, or he's there regularly. He puts on art shows. He puts on he has a I don't know if any of the justices have been in Howard High School. I'm sure you have, but there's a wing of the school, a branch of the school with African American art and sculptures, and this gentleman essentially runs it. So they knew the guy. And at some point or another, he did have insurance coverage, and it is unknown when that lapsed or when he stopped having coverage. But to answer your question, they knew the gentleman, and they just didn't ask for it.
Very well. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Justices. In response to Mr. Maluski's presentation, there are two things I'd like to sort of focus on. At one point, Mr. Maluski said there's nothing the school board can do. It has to allow these groups to use the facility. In fact, in subsection C and D of the statute, it does allow the boards, the school boards, the opportunity not to grant permission to use. And in fact, subsection C, which is the qualifier, the portion of the statute that allows this use, says a local school board may permit use of school property. In the statute itself, it's provided it's not an absolute. If you do deny, there is the opportunity to go and to appeal the denial to the State Board of Education. That's provided in subsection D. The second thing I'd like to focus on is the exchange that occurred between Justice Berger and Mr. Maluski, and when he said on the question of why would this apply to some groups and not to others? Could it apply to some groups and not to others? Well, the school board answered its own question in this case. The form itself states, and the first two words are in caps and bold, without exception, proof of liability insurance, and once again, in caps, bold, must accompany this form.
Help me understand if the purchase of insurance cannot be a waiver, if the district purchasing insurance cannot be a waiver of immunity because of the absence of express language in the statute. You agree with that? Because I think you told me that.
If that's my reading of prior case law, Justice Ridgely would be consistent with that, yes.
Okay, if that's not a waiver, how can the adoption of a form be a waiver?
Because the statute itself requires that they adopt rules for the use of these premises. And within that, they've executed a waiver by not following their own rules. If we've created a statute.
If their rule required that the school district have insurance, then that would be a waiver?
Yes, I believe so.
Even though it's not in the statute?
Yes, because the statute itself requires that they make rules for the use of the premises. Thank you.
And thank you both. The court will take this matter under advisement and we'll also take a brief recess.